Looks like Nancy Pelosi, AOC, the squad, they've put their weapons down for now. But what's the next chapter look like? Let's ask the great Josh Krauscher, a columnist at National Journal who follows everything really closely in politics. Josh, good afternoon to you. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, good afternoon, Vince.
We did have a moment this weekend. You had AOC and Nancy Pelosi on Sunday shows, basically signaling that, well, they're ready to unify again and they're going to move on together as a caucus. But this comes in the wake of the leadership of the House Democrats issuing a condemnation of sorts, a statement going after Congresswoman Ilhan Omar for equating the Taliban, Hamas with the United States and Israel in a tweet last week. Do you believe that this is the end, the cessation of hostilities between the squad and the leadership of the House Democrats?
No, it's not the end. And you can see from the social media feeds of the members of the squad, they want to continue the fight. I didn't really hear a true walk back, a true apology from Congresswoman Omar. It was, you know, the sort of kabuki dance where they said that she kind of didn't mean what she said or she didn't understand what she tweeted. But there was, you know, a bunch of reinforcement from her allies on the left on the issue. And then Pelosi pretty much backed down in her interview on CNN over the weekend. She pretty much tried to say it's over and done with. And the more moderate members, the dozen Jewish Democrats who really were offended and insulted by her comparisons, literally stood down and now it's become a partisan football. I mean, this is a challenge. This is a challenge sort of our times, where there aren't any gatekeepers in politics. You have these extremes, because of their outsized Twitter megaphones, controlling the conversation and hijacking this ideological fringe movement on the left. And even someone who's a pretty skilled leader like Nancy Pelosi isn't able to overcome the more extreme elements of her own caucus. She ends up kind of playing it to a draw, getting Omar to make a statement suggesting that she's standing down, and then we move on to the next story. But, you know, this issue is not going away.
Right.
The Twitter feeds of the squad are not going to be stopped. And this is going to come up here. It's almost like a forest fire, where you may take out one part of the forest fire, but it's going to crop up in a few weeks when they say something else about something else going on in the news that is very, very divisive.
You know, I'm reminded this has happened, as you're pointing out, this has happened multiple times throughout the past few years, as long as the squad has existed, be it what it may, especially with Ilhan Omar. It's almost like there's the anatomy of an Ilhan Omar scandal. She will say something in public that is indefensible, and then Democratic leadership will come out and begin the process of either condemning her or working towards some sort of condemnation. Remember, there was that House resolution that was designed to condemn Ilhan Omar. But by the time it actually reached the floor of the House, it sort of generically condemned all prejudice of any kind. It was like so watered down that Ilhan Omar herself supported it. And I'm just... You know, I just feel like we keep doing this. Like, this is how an Ilhan Omar scandal goes. She says something outrageous. The Democrats and the leadership attack her for it. And then by the end of it, everyone backs down and they pretend like there's no problem.
Yeah, you know the saying, three strikes, you're out. I mean, this is about the sixth strike in less than a year for Congresswoman Omar. She made a series of blatantly anti-Semitic comments, tropes, that she was almost condemned for. But that, as you know, Vince, that resolution was watered down itself a couple of years ago. I think people, she had some conspiracy theory where she said the dictatorship in Venezuela, we were responsible for, the United States was responsible for that. That didn't get a whole lot of attention. But there is this pattern of you know, blame America first and anti-Americanism that I don't think Democrats privately are really alarmed by what they hear, but they are afraid to speak out. I mean, you only had 12 mostly Jewish Democrats, more moderate Democrats, who had the courage to speak up, but their views are shared by other more moderate Democrats in the caucus. But they don't. It was a great story a couple of weeks ago where one anonymous Democratic lawmaker said, "We're scared of speaking out because we don't want to have to deal with their social media feeds. We don't want to get blasted." It almost sounds like Donald Trump in many ways. So they're afraid of the social media feeds of the squad. And so what happens is you have the majority of Democrats in the House who think a lot of what she's saying is just downright crazy,
yes,
but don't have the courage of their convictions to speak up, and the more extreme elements went out in the grand.
Well, there's also something much deeper going on here, too. The reason they're scared of those Twitter feeds is because that party has weaponized identity to the extent that the women who are a part of the squad now freely wield it as a political weapon. I mean, it's in some ways they have the advantage over Nancy Pelosi, the old white lady. I mean, even Rashida Tlaib was basically saying that the Democratic leadership is attacking Ilhan Omar because they're being racist. She said in so many words, she said that freedom of speech does not exist for Muslim women in Congress. She tweeted, the benefit of the doubt doesn't exist for Muslim women in Congress. House Democratic leadership should be ashamed of its relentless, exclusive tone policing of Congresswomen of color. Josh Krauscher, it seems to me that the Democratic Party has invented the very weapons that are now being used against them.
Yeah, you can see that with the Tlaib tweet, where, you know, this wasn't an issue of freedom of speech. Members of Congress can say whatever they want, but they also have to be held accountable for the political backlash that representing their constituencies. And, you know, when you have the dozen of your colleagues saying what you said was anti-Semitic, and I think even beyond that, like, can you imagine? I mean, 5 years ago, someone comparing American troops with the Taliban, I mean, even in the same sentence, it would have been the type of activity that would have been an automatic censure for a Democratic leader. I mean, there have been some fringe members of both caucuses over the years. Steve King was a good example on the Republican side. What happened with him? He lost his committee assignments after finally, you know, after having a lot of strikes and just making these bigoted comments. Green was on the Republican side, a different story, but she was voted on by the Democratic majority in the House. But I mean, again, this is like the sixth time or the seventh. I mean, it's a repeated offense from Congresswoman Omar, and she's right. How many times can you make anti-Semitic comments without actually being held accountable? Clearly, there's a partisan instinct for survival that's taking place over doing the right thing.
How much of this do you think is a bit of tantrum throwing over the fact that Democrats seem to have hit a wall legislatively? So, like, there's really not much more that can move forward. Now that Joe Manchin has said basically no to everything in the Senate, he's saying, no, I'm not doing a federal overhaul of the elections. No, I'm not getting rid of the filibuster. Legislatively, the Democratic Party has hit a standstill. They're not moving forward. And it almost seems like now, as a result, like these frustrations are spilling out in this infighting. Do you think that's possible?
There's some of that. I know Ocasio-Cortez gave an interview on the Sunday shows, and she sort of expressed that frustration. She even, I believe, wanted Stephen Breyer to retire so they can get a more progressive court justice on the Supreme Court. So
yes.
You hear that a lot. You hear that from a lot of even more rank-and-file Democratic members. You know, I think with Omar, you know, it does seem a little bit divorced from the current political environment. I mean, she got in trouble a couple weeks ago equating Israel and Hamas, a terrorist group, and that was one of the biggest problems. And then just 2 weeks later, this was at a hearing for Secretary of State Tony Blinken, and this is where she asked the question and then followed it up with a tweet that got her in trouble. So this is sort of divorced from the debate over infrastructure, divorced from the debate over legislation. This is like just a pure worldview that is very extreme, frankly. It's something we don't see that much in American politics, but it's gotten these very large amount of social media fans, and it creates this perception that this group and this view is a lot larger than it is in real life.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, you'd kind of expect that she'd have more gratitude for her place in American politics. I mean, she's in a pretty powerful position. She was a refugee from Somalia, like war-torn Somalia, and like you'd think that she'd have some gratitude for that, but here she is like tweeting about how the United States can be equated to the Taliban. It's actually really disturbing, and it's sad that Democrats are, you know, kind of like tiptoeing around it and not actually confronting it head on. They could do that, but they're turning down the opportunity. Josh Krauscher, thank you. Really good to talk to you, as always.
Thanks, man.